things in Glaucomora. Is that little brook still even there? Does it still run down to Donnycove through Killybegs, Kilkerry and Kildare?
The revival of Finian's Rainbow, the 1947 musical about sharecroppers, leprechauns, racism, and the evils of easy credit in the mythical state of Mizutuckie, has become a surprise hit of the Broadway season. It's at the St. James Theater on West 44th Street, and I'm very pleased to welcome two of its stars, Jim Norton and Kate Baldwin, to our show today. Hi.
Good morning.
And it's good to see you again, Jim.
Thank you.
The last time you were here, we were talking about very different kinds of play. You're mainly known here, anyway, as a dramatic actor, especially as an interpreter of Conor McPherson. You won a Tony last year for The Seafarer, also in The Weir, Dublin Carol, Port Authority. But you sing in this show. Have you done that before?
Yes, in the bath or shower. Yes. Yeah, no, it's an incredible thing that's happened to me at this point in my career that I end up, you know, realizing one of the great fantasies of my life to be in a Broadway musical.
Well, you sing well, so
Thank you.
Has anybody ever said to you, hey, you know, would you consider doing a musical, or have you always just thought of yourself as a dramatic actor?
Well, you know, as an actor, sometimes you have to do lots of other things. But I mean, I did start out in life wanting to be a singer, but I didn't think I was good enough, so I kind of stopped studying that and concentrated on acting. But I love music, and I love particularly Broadway musicals, so I'm in a very happy situation at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, both you and Kate were in the Encores production. Mm-hmm. Kate, that was at City Center last spring?
Mm-hmm. In March, yes.
Had you ever done the show before then?
Yes, I've actually done the show twice before the Encores version of it. I did one in a regional theater in Chicago, which is where I'm from, right out of college. And then I did a version that was about 10 years ago that had designs on coming to Broadway, but ended up only playing in Miami and in Cleveland. So this
and why didn't it make it? Because, you know, the play on some levels really makes sense,
right?
And maybe makes more sense today than it did 10 years ago.
I think you've hit the nail on the head right there. I think 10 years ago we weren't ready for Yip Harburg and Fred Sadie's sort of wacky view of life and their treatment of very serious subjects in a sort of whimsical manner. And I think that script had been rewritten to sort of highlight the problems, and the message was rather heavy-handed instead of being light, as it is in our production right now.
You've been in Broadway musicals like The Full Monty and Thoroughly Modern Millie, but isn't this your first lead role?
Yes, it is.
And the two of you, as I said, were in the Encores production. Did the entire cast sign up to the Broadway run?
Practically everybody. There have been some changes, but you know, the Encores production was a blast. It was absolutely wonderful, and I thought it was just my one chance ever to be close to a Broadway musical for five performances. Certainly, we didn't have any ideas that it was going to transfer to Broadway. But then David Rickenthal came along, a white knight, and said, "You know, I'm going to take the show to Broadway."
Do you know when the last time the show was revived to Broadway? I understand it was nearly 50 years ago.
1947.
No, that was the original.
The original.
Then there was a revival.
I think there was a revival in 1960 that played City Center, I think.
Well, it's interesting because whether you have to adjust the script or not, although you're saying this is pretty much the original script?
It is. It is very loyal to the original script. I think it's been streamlined quite a bit to highlight, you know, the events of the story, and there's quite a bit of good flavor in there for, you know, our fictional land of Mizutuckie and our Irish immigrants and our Southern you know, proclivities. So it's all in there.
The reason I ask is because it has so many songs that have become standards. You would have thought that it would be revived again and again, the way that Guys and Dolls and
amazing.
Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
And others.
Beautiful.
I mean, you have How Are Things in Glaucomora, Old Devil Moon, If This Isn't Love, When I'm Not Near the Girl I Love. These are all songs that have become part of the Great American Songbook.
Exactly, yeah.
Probably the Great Irish Songbook, too.
That's true. I saw it first in Dublin in 1964, and I was amazed that I knew all the songs because I've been listening to them on the radio for years. I mean, it contains absolute beautiful gems.
But it is a rather odd musical, at least in terms of plot. You want to give us a brief synopsis, Kate?
It's so hard to talk about the plot because I always sort of liken it to a quilt. You know, it has these sort of patchwork ideas that are kind of stitched together with a lot of charm. It's easier to talk about the themes or the sort of...
it's very surreal. It's full of magic realism. It's...
In 1947.
Indeed. He was well ahead of his time. Yeah, mm-hmm. But
you even have a patchwork curtain suggest that patchwork quilt.
We have one, yes, yeah, to get the audience into the mood of what they're about to experience.
Well, Yip Harburg, who wrote the lyrics and co-wrote the book, is probably best known for songs, well, for The Wizard of Oz, mm-hmm. Standards like Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, and It's Only a Paper Moon, and Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And this show, there's a song called Look to the Rainbow. Of course, the title has the word rainbow in it. Do you think that's just a coincidence?
Well, he was obsessed with rainbows. He loved rainbows. He loved the possibility of magic happening. And he also was very interested in the idea of dealing with discrimination in a humorous way. He wasn't hitting people over the head with his political ideas and ideals.
He was known as Broadway's social conscience.
Oh, very much so. But he had the gift to present his arguments in a very palatable way, I think.
Yes.
And he makes fun of the racist politics of the South, but even takes a dig at the GOP in one of the song lyrics, mm-hmm. which got a big laugh from some portions of the audience.
Some portions, yes.
The show features a group of sharecroppers who are being threatened with eviction by this corrupt sheriff and a racist senator. And then the racist senator is turned from white to black by a wish made over the pot of gold. How was that received in 1947? Did you look into the history of the play?
Yes, a lot of people were concerned about that. And one of the reasons, perhaps, that it hasn't been produced over the years is because of the difficulty of achieving that particular piece of magic on stage, which I think we successfully do without giving away what happens. Mm-hmm. I think we have solved that problem.
Well, I'm going to give it away. In the ritual production, the actor who was changed from white to black did it in blackface, and I don't think that's
not acceptable.
I don't think that would not happen today. I think the last time I saw blackface was on British TV in a minstrel show
in the
70s, and I was shocked as an American.
Appalling show, appalling show.
But that wouldn't even happen in Britain anymore.
No.
The show is remembered mostly for the great music, despite all this other stuff. Did the bizarre plot allow Harburg and Burton Lane to mix Irish ballads and love songs their versions of gospel and
with great skill? Yeah,
it's such a good way to include so many different styles. I mean, we've got a fantastic orchestra of 26 pieces with including, you know, six strings and an awesome harp, and then every now and then you'll hear a banjo too. So you do get sort of a wonderful smorgasbord of sound there.
And I gather this was the first Broadway musical in which black and white performers danced together.
That's right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That caused quite a lot of controversy at the time.
A lot of stir.
It's a big cast. We have, 14 girls and 19 guys?
I think so.
Yeah, it's a big, happy family.
It is.
Mm. My guests are Jim Norton and Kate Baldwin, two of the stars of the revival of Finian's Rainbow, now at the St. James Theater on West 44th Street. Kate, you're also going to be at Feinstein's?
Yes, on Sunday night. Sunday night at 8:30, I'm going to do my very first cabaret outing ever. And it's to celebrate the CD that I just released, which features the music of Burton Lane and Yip Harburg, who wrote Finian's Rainbow, and whose music I find enchanting, and made a whole record of their work together.
Did you do it knowing that you were going to be in this production?
Yeah, I did. Well, it happened. The idea for it came to me when we were doing the encores version of the show, and I sort of fell in love with their work all over again, even having done the show about 10 years ago. So I sort of rediscovered them and rediscovered songs that I hadn't heard in a long time, some that I'd never heard before, and decided to sort of brush them off and freshen them up and put them on CD.
And Yip Harburg is probably one of our most beloved songwriters, even
Absolutely.
Though people may not know all the songs he wrote.
That's true. That's true. And,
not just with Lane.
Right. He wrote quite extensively with Harold Arlen. Wizard of Oz is one of the big ones with him. But he and Burton Lane wrote quite a few together as well. And he sort of has these themes that come back over and over again. His magic, his rainbows, his charm, his blindness. You know, Old Devil Moon that blinds me with love is a good example of how he uses, you know, the sort of mystical sense of what love can be.
Jim, you play Finian McLonergan, mm-hmm. who has brought his daughter, Sharon, played by Kate, to the southern state of Missitucky mm-hmm. from Ireland to make their fortunes. And what's the rationale for this move?
Well, it's he moves from Ireland to America to, you know, the great American dream, to find riches. And he's not the brightest man in the world. He has this idea that, you know, if he plants a little piece of gold in the ground, that it will grow and he will become rich. But his basic concern is for his daughter Sharon, whom he obviously loves very dearly, and the mother has recently died, so it's just him and Sharon in a country that isn't doing too well economically, Ireland at that time. So he heads for America, as many Irish people did.
Well, he's not just planting a piece of gold. He's planting a pot of gold that he's stolen from the other side of the rainbow.
That, yes.
And that brings a leprechaun into the story, Og.
In hot pursuit.
Played by Christopher Fitzgerald, the rightful owner of the pot of gold. And if he doesn't get it back, horror of horrors, he's going to become a human.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's something for everyone on this show. The great thing about it is that it's a great family show.
Absolutely.
And we get lots of kids coming. My grandkids came on the first night and they'd never seen me in a play before, because the kind of plays I appear in are not really appropriate for 11-year-olds and 6-year-olds, but they loved it. And the great
thing is, first time you haven't said some of those words.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes. Yes.
No, but Chris Fitzgerald does a ton of really great magic, great, you know, old-fashioned sort of sleight of hand magic, which is so charming and effective. And people, you know, come backstage and say, "Well, I didn't see, you know, a lot of fireworks done by the set out there, but what the people brought to it and what the actors are able to do is completely fulfilling and completely charming."
When they arrive, Sharon meets Woody, played by Cheyenne Jackson, who's a farmer and an activist for the rights of the locals, and they immediately fall in love, and I guess it wouldn't be a Broadway musical if they hadn't.
Exactly.
That's allowed in a musical, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, they have a little bit of a tiff at the beginning, but they fall pretty hard for each other by the third song, and then it's really a question then of how they're going to deal with Finian and the economic crisis and everything that befalls Rainbow Valley.
And of course, Finian is very active in setting it up. It's making sure that this relationship comes to fruition.
But we also have the spectacle of the sharecroppers being given lots of credit based on a rumor that there'll soon be a lot of gold discovered on their land. And that part of the story had a lot of the audience members the night I was there laughing kind of bitterly.
Well, everything comes full circle, I suppose. Yeah, it's extraordinary that a show that's written in 1947 can be so appropriate today. But
yes.
It does make its point rather well, I think.
Yes.
How difficult is it making these songs your own? Because they're so well known. And you sing a duet with Cheyenne, Old Devil Moon.
Right.
I mean, the people in the audience are all humming along.
Sure. I think people know Old Devil Moon more as a jazz standard, and they know interpretations that have a more of a jazzier influence. And we're keeping it pretty straight, like a Broadway standard, and we're trying to act it, and we're trying to infuse it with what's happening with these two characters. But it is a great tune, and people do, you know, sort of fall under the spell of its, you know, its great melody and its great sort of rhythm, and they remember the jazz version of it too.
And Yip Harburg must have realized how great these tunes were, because he reprises them a few times throughout the
song.
You've
got it flaunted, yes.
Terry White, who plays one of the sharecroppers, stops the show with her rendition of Necessity.
Yeah.
A recent article in the New York Times revealed that about a year ago she was homeless and living in Washington Square Park. So maybe the themes of the show aren't all that outdated in other ways. Did you know that?
Oh, yes, we did.
We did, yeah.
Yes, we did, yes.
She spoke about it a little bit when we were at Encores.
Sometimes art reflects life and vice versa. No, she's a wonderful performer, incredible. And what she does with that song every night just amazes me. I spend that, during that song, I sit then side stage and just watch it because she's just amazing. And we have such wonderful performers, and Chuck Cooper is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And David Schramm, too.
And David Schramm, yeah. Great cast.
So now that you've started singing, Jim, do you think you'll be doing more of it?
Yes, I'm about to do a Sondheim on CD.
You haven't mentioned his dancing either. He's got
everybody, he can kick up his heels. You have to dance, too.
Yeah,
you,
we get our Irish dance on. Yeah,
yeah,
we do.
It's extraordinary at this point in my life to find that I have these qualities. Now, I mean, I was totally in awe when we started. I don't sing very much in the show, but to sing alongside.
You sing in tune, and you sing well, yes, and you have a beautiful bass baritone voice.
Thank you very much. But to be on stage with people of the caliber of Kate and Cheyenne Jackson, and to have the honor of singing beside them, it's wonderful. It's great.
Will there be a cast recording?
Yes, we just recorded it on Monday, so yeah, it will come out in February on the PS Classics label.
In the meantime, people will have to do with Kate's recent CD until such time.
I do sing Glacamora on there.
You do. Sing it beautifully.
It's a different arrangement, but it does the trick until we have the cast album.
And is this an open run?
It is.
Yeah, it is. Open. I think it's going to have a life, and I think there are plans to tour it and plans maybe to take it elsewhere, maybe to Europe.
And right now it's at the St. James Theater, which is one of those great old Broadway houses.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. Beautiful theater.
The audience.
1,700 people.
Yeah. And
how many?
1,700. Wow.
And they feel so close to you, too. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the mezzanine, people who've, friends of mine who've seen it from the mezzanine say, we feel like we're right in it, you know. And it does feel like a very warm, inviting house. And it's a great house for comedy. And it plays so beautifully there.
We have details about everything, tickets and the like, for Finian's Rainbow and for your appearance at Feinstein's on our show page
our
website at WNYC.org. And a reminder that Jim Norton and Kate Baldwin are just two of the stars of this new production with how many members in the cast?
35?
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in
the vicinity. And a large orchestra.
Yes.
So this is an expensive show to mount.
Yes. So do come and see it. Keep us there.
Tell your friends.
Through the winter months.
Because you got to sell as many tickets
we
as
have.
You can.
Right.
But it really is a lot of fun, and I want to thank the two of you so much. Can we go out with a little bit of music from the show? Well,
Jim, hit it.
you want to sing a couple of bars yourself, Jim?
I think maybe we leave it to the recording.
The Finian's Rainbow at the St. James Theater. That's 246 West 44th Street. And again, I'm told to mention your event at the Carlisle this Sunday night.
At Feinstein's.
I'm
okay.
Sorry. They
That's
said
right.
the Carlisle. It's Feinstein's. There's no show on Sunday night?
We have a matinee on Sunday at 3 p.m. And then at Feinstein's, I'm there at 8:30. So it's going to be a full day. Mm. And I'm going to sleep well that night. I guarantee it.
Idle poor become the idle rich. You'll never know just who is who or who is which. Won't it be rich when everyone's poor relative becomes a Rockefeller and palms no longer itch? What is rich?
When we all have vermin and plastic teeth, how will we determine who's who underneath?
And when all your neighbors are upper class,
Joneses from your rasters.
Let's toast the day we drink that drinky up, but with the little pinky up.
The day on which the idle poor become the idle.